The University of the Air presents Our American Culture, insights into the way we live, presented by teachers and scholars in specialized areas of knowledge. Each Monday and Friday at this time, various facets of our culture will be discussed by university staff and faculty members, authorities in medicine, religion, education, the arts, language, industry, and science. A broadcast designed to offer you an additional opportunity for participation in the intellectual life of the University of Illinois. Today, Professor Turpin C. Bannister, head of the Department of Architecture, discusses architecture and the American people today. Professor Bannister is a very distinguished man in his field, having been president of the Society of Architectural Historians, editor of the Journal of the Society of Architectural Historians, architectural editor of the New York State Guide, author of numerous important articles on architectural history, and in an advisory capacity on a great many survey committees. And now, Professor Bannister.
The people of the United States have a tremendous stake in architecture. Because there is hardly a single activity in our dynamic daily life that does not presuppose the shelter of a building, we demand buildings of many kinds and in vast quantities. We live in more than 30 million dwellings, work in more than 240,000 industrial establishments, purchase our wants in about 2 million retail stores, struggle with our accounts at more than 14,000 banks, educate our children in more than 183,000 schools and 1,700 colleges, recoup our health in more than 6,500 hospitals, relax in more than 18,000 theaters, worship in more than 265,000 churches, and elect enough officials to fill the countless governmental buildings of Washington, the 48 states, the 3,073 counties, and the 16,000 incorporated cities, towns, and villages of our nation. But these are only a few of the more than 270 building types we need for the business of living. Altogether, we have invested in our buildings more than one-seventh of our entire capital wealth. During the past generation, we have built at a prodigious rate. Since 1920, despite depression and war, we have spent more than $262 billion for new buildings, a sum more than ample to erect a well-built corridor 6 feet wide and 10 feet high, circling the equator 65 times. In 1950 alone, we spent over $14 billion for new buildings, quite enough to construct a similar corridor stretching 5,600 miles from New York to San Francisco and back again to Miami, Florida. Notwithstanding this astronomical achievement, building will continue to be of primary concern to us all. Buildings wear out, become outmoded, and must be replaced. Of all the dwellings in the United States, half were built before World War I, and almost a fourth are now more than 50 years old. Some of them, of course, deserve to be cherished because of historical associations or intrinsic beauty. Some still possess economic value, but a vast majority are so decayed or obsolete that they constitute a national liability. Industry and commerce likewise find obsolete buildings to be intolerable handicaps and regard new buildings as important aids to profits. Rising standards of facilities and operation demand large replacement and expansion programs for many building types, such as schools and hospitals. New activities, moreover, call forth new types, such as motels, television studios, and atomic plants. Changing social patterns, such as population shifts, migrations, and dispersals, create a surprising volume of new construction. Replacement of destroyed buildings accounts for a large part of our activity. In 1948, for example, more than 388,000 fires in buildings constituted a major portion of the year's fire loss of $715 million. Hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, floods, and other acts of God take a large annual toll, and even the lowly termite adds to our construction bill. The most relentless pressure for new buildings arises, however, in huge and inexorable additions to our population. The increase of 19 million persons since 1940 has created a vast demand for new buildings of all kinds, a demand far from being satisfied today. If the same rate of increase continues during the next decade, which means the addition of another 22 million to form a total of 172 million in 1960, and if these new millions are to be accommodated with building space in the same proportion to which we are now accustomed, it will be necessary to build in the next 10 years, for this reason alone, more than 5,750,000 new dwelling units, more than 290,000 new retail stores, new theaters enough to add 1,700,000 seating capacity, enough new hospitals to provide 213,000 more beds, and 38,000 new churches, as well as a like increase of all other building types. We have, therefore, been a nation of builders by necessity, and we will continue to be so for the same reason. How do we satisfy our voracious appetite for buildings? And what place does this activity hold in our economic life? The building process in the United States proceeds in five stages. First comes the demand, generated by the owner, who is motivated by some impelling desire to undertake the building project. Second is finance. For since buildings normally surpass the owner's cash resources, it is necessary to spread the cost over a manageable period by borrowing from a lending agency. Third is design. Because owners lack the technical knowledge, experience, and facilities to solve their own needs, the design function is performed by architects, skilled in the definition of such needs, the analysis of the problems involved, and the formulation of the most feasible solution for the project. This solution is then explicitly stated by the architect in comprehensive working drawings and specifications. Fourth comes construction, which is usually directed and coordinated by the general contractor, who distributes different phases of the work to the sub or trade contractors, who in turn are responsible for the assembly of the necessary building materials, equipment, and labor force for the execution of the respective trades. Fifth is supervision. Since owners are rarely competent to judge the accuracy of technical procedures or products, architects render this professional service for the protection of the owner, and in many other ways facilitate the smooth progress of construction. For small projects, the operation of the building process is relatively simple, but for large, complex programs, personnel and organization must be greatly elaborated. Thus, for a large commercial structure, the owner may be a large group of individuals, a company, or an institution. The functions of design and supervision may require the services of a large firm of architects employing many highly specialized technicians. And construction may involve 100 different trades, the coordination of which demands an experienced and alert general contracting firm with a large staff. In such projects, our building teams, composed of architects, general contractors, trade contractors, and skilled mechanics, have achieved extraordinary feats. The Empire State Building, for example, is a especially dramatic instance, for its 1,250-foot shaft is the tallest man-made structure in the world, and it encloses a record volume of 36 million cubic feet. It utilized 10 million brick, 58,000 tons of steel, and 50 miles of piping. 66 elevators were installed in its 7 miles of shafts. Yet so skillfully was it designed by its architects, Shreve, Lamb, and Harmon, and so efficiently was its construction organized by its contractors, Sterrett Brothers and Eakin, that it was brought to completion in the incredibly short time of 13.5 months. During World War II, American architects and builders, working at streamlined speed, accomplished even more astounding records. To create the vast quantities of buildings which we erect each year requires the services of a building industry of huge proportions. In 1939, a year of relatively modest building volume, the construction census reported 29,000 general contractors, 176,000 trade contractors, and a building labor force of 776,000 men. In 1950, however, building construction employed a direct labor force of more than 2,600,000 men. Another 150,000 supplied architectural and engineering services for design and supervision. Supporting these direct groups were other organizations and workers who captured the raw materials, fashioned them into usable forms, and transported and distributed them to the trades. In 1950, there were probably at least 1,800,000 of these indirect workers, giving a total personnel of more than 4.5 million for the whole industry. It has been estimated that 86% of the total cost of our buildings goes to pay this direct and indirect labor cost. Thus, of the $14 billion spent for buildings in 1950, probably more than $12 billion went for payroll. When we recall that each of these workers supports an average of 3 dependents, it is clear that the health of the building industry is of direct concern to more than 17 million Americans, or 11% of our total population. Building is consequently a factor of the highest significance in our national economy. Because architects perform the strategic function of design and supervision, the American people and the building industry look to architects for leadership in the improvement of buildings and the building process. Over the past century, American architects have developed many refinements in their working methods to raise their standards of service to a level of unprecedented completeness and thoroughness. The performance of high-quality architectural services demands of the architect an unusual degree of technical competence, impartial judgment, and unimpeachable integrity. And for these reasons, the practice of architecture is in every sense a rigorous and respected profession. Thus, in each building project, as well as in the building process and in the building industry, the professional position of the architect gives him an influence, obligation, and responsibility to act through the profession toward the improvement of the industry and its product as an enlightened service to society itself. As the American people face their urgent need for new buildings of increasing complexity, usefulness, safety, economy, and attractiveness, they have recognized more and more the value and necessity of skillful architectural services. From 1920 to 38, American architects designed 73% of all the building projects in the United States, exclusive of small houses. In 1939, they designed 81%, and in 1948, this had risen to 87%. Increasing demand for buildings and the increasing use of architectural services emphasize the urgent need for constant expansion of competent architectural personnel. Such personnel cannot be recruited overnight, for the training of a skilled architect requires a 5-year program of university study and several years of practical experience in an established architectural office. Even then, the aspirant must pass a rigorous technical examination administered by the state before he can be licensed to undertake independent commissions. In 1950, there were 19,000 registered architects in the United States, but it is estimated that it will require all the 40 accredited architectural schools of the country working at peak capacity throughout the coming decade to supply enough graduates to replace the natural attrition among present architects and to expand the profession to meet the increased demand for architectural services. Quantity of construction is not the only requisite to satisfy our building needs. We must seek quality as well. Since an American child has a life expectancy of 68 years, since he will spend at least 55 of those years in buildings, and since buildings are the most conspicuous man-made elements in our environment, buildings therefore exert a powerful, inescapable, and constant influence on us all for good or bad. Their quality is thus of personal and intimate concern to each and every individual. The contributions that well-designed buildings of high quality can make to our well-being are manifold. They can lighten our expenditure of time, effort, and money by providing convenient settings for our daily tasks. We need only compare the routine drudgery of a century ago to appreciate the effectiveness of a skillfully planned modern kitchen. American industry, too, knows well the advantages of factories planned specifically to facilitate the process of production. Maximal utility is a prime asset in all types of buildings, and it is here that present-day architects have achieved special progress in making our buildings more exactly suited to the activities they house. Nevertheless, efficiency is measured not alone in physical terms of time and dollars saved, but also, and even more important, in the health, comfort, and happiness provided for the building's occupants. So accepted have these criteria become that the most modest housing project is now expected as a matter of course to provide amenities to a degree unknown 2 centuries ago to the most luxurious monarchs.